This is Andy from That UFO Podcast. You're listening to Indie Podcaster, where Jeff features content creators and the great things they're doing. Stick around.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artists? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, the podcast father.
It is time for some more Indie Podcaster episodes. I'm your host, Jeff, a.k.a. Podcast Father. I have my good friend, Jay, from the Hostile Environment Podcast. What's up, Jay?
Not much, man. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
No problem. So before we talk about the guest that I have on this upcoming interview here, let's give you a minute to talk about your podcast. You kind of just do whatever the hell you want on yours.
Yeah, I don't really have a format. I'm just kind of all over the place. I kind of want it to be a little different than everyone else because there's 8 billion podcasts in the world. So I kind of want it to be a little different. So it started off with just out of boredom, out of COVID, and it just grew into something. And now I'm all over the place, man. I talk about being a correctional officer for 12 years and some of the shit that I went down. I talk about funny stuff from the internet. I do interviews. I'm just all over the place, man. So I'm trying to cover all my bases and trying to get a big audience, trying to grow my brand. You know, I'm getting a lot of good feedback, but, you know, there's always room to improve, and that's what I'm looking to do. So, you know, getting to know a guy like yourself who could maybe, help me out, you know, show me the way. Who knows, right? Maybe I can get a little bigger and we can help each other out. Who knows?
I always got your back, man, for sure. So, everybody, make sure you check out Jay's podcast, the Hostile Environment Podcast. It's available, hell, like I always say, everywhere.
Everywhere.
Or it's got to be damn close to it, right?
Well, I'm in Canada, so I don't have as many outlets as you guys do in America. But, I'm covering my bases out here as much as I can anyway.
Were you like a Mountie correctional officer, Jay?
No, I wish I was. That'd be awesome. No, I was just a regular, good old-fashioned jail guard.
Hey, okay, well, hey, Canada, hey. No. So, the guest that's featured today, and you're actually really excited about this, Jay. I got a chat with Chris Van Vliet, CVV.
When you offered to let me come on and be on your show, I wanted to know who I was talking about. So I Googled him, of course, and I was impressed. He lives, he grew up 5 minutes from where I'm talking to you right now in Pickering, Ontario, Canada. You know, it's a small little city outside of Toronto. I think the population is, it's maybe 1 million, if that. I mean, not even. I think it's like 900,000. So to know that a guy who has built what he's built, and like a small empire, has built what he's built and doing big things, this just goes to show you that even coming from a small little town like Pickering, Ontario, you can accomplish anything you want, right? The sky's the limit.
And you're also a big wrestling fan, and it was kind of crazy that you hadn't heard of CVV, so I'm excited that I got to kind of hook you up with somebody new here.
Yeah, when I was growing up, man, I lived for it. I tried out back in 1999. I mean, I my dream was to be a wrestler, but those days are long gone, and now it's all about podcasting, bro.
All about podcasting, and Chris Van Vliet does have that. He has a podcast called Insight with Chris Van Vliet. His big thing is definitely his YouTube channel, though. By far over 100 million views now. He's won 4 Emmys, even. He's been voted like Mr. Bachelor number one. This guy has got it all, Jay. He is living the dream.
He is living the dream, man. And I have to beg you to ask him one question. I'm doing his research. So if you could do me this small favor and ask him this one question in case I never get to interview him.
All right.
What was more special to him, his first Emmy nomination or winning Big Fish of the Day and that fishing trip that he was on, or being the Bachelor of the Year nominee for Cosmo? I mean, I don't know where he would rank those three things, so I got to hear this.
Let's not wait any longer. Let's get into this.
Let's do it.
Before we start the conversation here, though, I got to take care of a little business. Woo, 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 you know it. This podcast would not exist without the awesome engagement I get from the community. If you're not in contact with me, I highly encourage you to reach out to me on Twitter at @podcast_father or hit me up under the contact section on my website, podcastfather.com. If you really like what I'm doing, you can buy me a coffee or leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast listening platform. This podcast and myself are proud members of Quite the Thing Media. This network is awesome. It has podcasts that speak to you. Great network full of independent content creators. Go on site and check them out, quitethethingmedia.com. All the music used on this podcast, I credit to the artist Young Karts. Go to the site and listen to the music, youngkartbeats.com. The sponsors of this podcast are amazing. I highly encourage you to show them love just like you do me. Pod page. You can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a beautiful, listener-friendly podcast website from your RSS feed. Customize the design, get a professional look going. You'll be proud of all your work in just a few clicks. Make it easy and simple. Make sure you go online and create your podcast website, podpage.com. Flex Up Time. If you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to Indie Drop-In. Get more listeners, get more exposure. Submit an episode. Go online to indiedropin.com/creators. Oh, hell yeah, Riverside FM is great. Your online recording studio. The easiest way to record studio, quality podcasts, and video interviews from anywhere. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you must go to riverside.fm right now to get started. That's enough of the business. Now it's time to jump into this awesome conversation, which is powered by riverside.fm. I have been waiting for this conversation. I am super excited. I'm talking to CVV. No, I'm not talking about anybody that's going to steal your credit card security code. It's Chris Van Vliet. What's going on, Chris?
Jeff, thank you so much for having me on. And yeah, that always trips me out. I look at the back of a credit card. I'm like, wait a second. Those are my initials.
Yeah, that just means your money, man. That's what that means.
Sure. I'll take it.
Well, Chris and I go way back. No, I'm just kidding. We just recently started talking on Twitter. We don't go way back at all. But a boy could dream. But nevertheless, I'm excited to talk to you, man. And I appreciate you taking a few minutes to chat with me.
Of course. And, you know, after today, we can say that we go way back.
True. True.
Yeah.
You're the man of many. I mean, you've had many things, man, like Bachelor of the Year, Emmy winning guy. What, four of them nominated for like, what, 9 or 10? And the most interesting man in the world. What else do I not know about you, man?
Wow. There's a lot of titles there. Thank you for that. I think one of the biggest things people might not know is that I also co-founded a bass fishing brand. So super passionate about bass fishing, fished in many bass tournaments. I started doing that when I was 14 years old. And my tournament fishing partner, who's also one of my longtime college friends, me and him started a tungsten weight company. So if you're into bass fishing, if you love catching largemouth or smallmouth bass, we sell tungsten fishing weights. Our company is called Woo Tungsten, W-O-O exclamation point tungsten. Also the sound you make when you catch a giant fish, you're just jacked up. Woo!
It's the sound you make anytime anything great happens in life, man.
This is true. And when we first started the company, we made these shirts that just said woo, W-O-O exclamation mark. Coolest thing about wearing them was whether you knew about the brand or not, people would see your shirt in a grocery store or at Walmart and just be like, woo. And then you would instinctively go back to them. Woo.
Did they slap your chest or chop it or anything like that?
That would have been really taking things to the next level. I gotta work that into it next time someone does that to me at the grocery store.
Can't do that with COVID these days, I guess.
Ah, true.
Fishing's awesome. My dad and I used to go fishing. Actually, one time, the first time I really remember fishing, I just love throwing out the cast, you know?
Yeah.
That's all I wanted to do as a kid. Like, I never was patient enough to leave it in the water. But one time I just got that thing like 20, 30 feet up in the air and got it stuck in a tree and I ruined the whole day. But I was really proud of the height that I got.
Oh, what were you fishing for?
I don't even remember then. Anything. It was like at a local pond.
Fish.
Yeah, yeah. As a kid, you know, hell, I couldn't tell you.
What part of the country are you in?
Right now I am in the Midwest. Back then I was in the state of Washington.
Oh, very nice. The thing is, the Midwest could mean you're in Michigan, New York, Ohio. Like, you could be anywhere. So
Pennsylvania.
Okay. It was close. I lived in the Midwest for 5 years. I was in Cleveland for 5 years.
This is going to be an awesome conversation. The listeners are going to be excited because every once in a while, it's awesome to talk to somebody who's been in the grind for a while and had a really good outcome. Podcasting and content creating can be a very difficult thing. When did you first get started, man? Like, how long ago do you remember?
In podcasting or content creation in general?
Content creation in general. I know you got out of college and you got involved in TV and things like that.
Yeah, and that's basically how it started. I mean, I graduated from college in 2005, so the idea of content creating didn't really exist. This was before Facebook was public. Like, you had to be part of a school to be invited to join it. This is before YouTube was really a thing. So I was a television news reporter to start off. Then I became a TV host. I was working for MTV2 Canada. And then I was working for a show in Toronto on Sun TV. So the idea of talking to people and creating content was there. certainly didn't exist in the same way that it does now. But the reason I started my YouTube channel was completely by accident, Jeff. So I was doing these long form interviews at the time, like 10, 15, 20 minutes. But in the world of television, you're only airing 30 seconds, like one soundbite. And I thought, man, this kind of sucks that, you know, I put all this time, all this effort, all this research into this interview that they're only going to show 20, 30, 40 seconds of. And on top of that, with the broadcasting model, they're only going to see it if you happen to be watching Channel 19 at exactly 4:17 p.m. on this specific Thursday. So I started taking the full uncut versions of those interviews and just throwing them on my YouTube channel simply because I just wanted kind of like a digital library. Like, my interviews will exist somewhere. If you didn't see them on TV, at least they're over here somewhere. That's how it started. And through doing some interviews with some pretty big people, like the Twilight movies were a really big thing at the time, Hunger Games, Justice League, and like everything that was going on in Marvel, that stuff was starting to really get big. So when you're talking to some of the biggest stars in the world and they have these huge fan bases, some of those interviews were getting hundreds of thousands, if not millions of views in a few days. So that was kind of how it started. And then fast forward many years later, I started realizing that people were only able to watch these interviews if they had the YouTube app open. Like, what if they were driving or walking their dog or whatever? And I started just taking the audio from the interviews I was doing, making a podcast. And that was really how it started. I didn't go into this with some master plan. It just kind of happened.
What year did you start putting them out on YouTube?
YouTube, my channel started in 2011. And for anybody who's just starting a channel and realizing like how insanely slow the growth is on there, like, stick with it, because it took me 7.5 years to get my silver play button. So 7.5 years to get 100,000 subscribers. The year after that, I was already up in the 200,000. So it's kind of like a snowball rolling down a hill. Once you get that momentum going, it really starts to pick up.
8 years, a lot evolved and changed with YouTube too during that time period.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And I feel like when I was putting stuff up back then, it was, again, really just a place for it to just sit and live permanently. The whole shift happened. I would say, like, there were obviously some early adopters like iJustine, or was it Ray William Scott? Do you remember that guy?
Yeah.
So there were like really early adopters in the late 2000s, but the idea of like a Mr. Beast or a Logan Paul, like, that's a pretty new thing over just the last handful of years.
My friend and I really hit it big on MySpace back before 08 even. So you're talking like 07, 06. I say really big, right? North of a million is a heck of an achievement for views on that platform, but never able to replicate that exactly on YouTube. So definitely credit you with that. You got to definitely stick with it. You're right.
Yeah, it's all about just being consistent, especially now. Like, I was able to have some success in a different time and a different era on YouTube where these videos were kind of just being cherry picked. And you still kind of see that. It's always so fascinating. I'm sure you've seen this, Jeff, where a video gets added to your recommended and it has like 2 million views and you go in and that person has like 346 subscribers.
Yep.
In those situations, I go, congrats. Like, you found your way into the algorithm. Like, that's amazing. You may never have a video that pops like this, but congrats, you somehow figured it out.
All my recommended ended up being my children's videos they watch somehow. So like kids opening toys and all that. That's the shit too, man. People are really into that. I never realized it until, you know, my kids started watching YouTube. Like, holy hell, those kids are famous. They're rich, man.
Oh yeah. Also, I would imagine your watch time on those kids' videos are pretty long, because I know a lot of my friends who have kids, they just will kind of put that on and it just goes from one video to the next, to the next, to the next. So YouTube goes, oh, you watch all of these videos in their completion? Like, great, we'll show you more of those.
Yeah, the ultimate consumer, right?
That's it.
What about podcasts, man? Did you listen to a lot of podcasts back in the day? Like, what are some of the first ones you remember listening to?
I was always aware of Joe Rogan having a podcast, but I only would kind of listen here and there. I was one of those people, not unlike a lot of people, that you'd get in your car to commute to work and you would just put your Spotify playlist on and you would listen to the same songs that you've heard 473 times, and you would just listen to them and you would just kind of just drive to work like a zombie and then drive home like a zombie listening to these songs. Maybe you're singing along to them, but it wasn't really doing anything to help you learn. And I had this moment where I realized, I was living in Miami at the time, I was commuting 45 minutes each way. And I realized that's 7.5 hours a week that I could be doing something. I started with audiobooks and then I switched over to podcasts, and I kind of just, even if I wasn't taking notes or anything, you're just kind of like learning by osmosis. And I just started diving in deep and listening to anything that I thought was interesting. Started really with like, can I find a long form interview with this particular guest? And I would search their name. Oh, okay. This is how I found Dax Shepard's podcast, actually. I happened to type in Tom Brady, who I think is the greatest of all time. Happened to type his name in, saw that there was like an hour long interview on Armchair Expert. And I went, oh yeah, I think I heard that Dax Shepard had a podcast. I'm going to give it a try. And now I listen to like every episode of Dax Shepard's. So if you were to look at my podcast playlist on any given week, it's Armchair Expert. I love The School of Greatness with Lewis Howes. I listen to The Ed Milet Show. And then depending on who Joe Rogan is talking to, I am fascinated with the way that he has conversations. It's mind-blowing to me how 2, 3, 4 hours can pass without them like losing track of what they were talking about. Like they just have more stuff to talk about. So that's basically what I'm listening to a lot of now.
I'm going to take a minute here to tell you about a fine sponsor of this podcast, Indie Drop-In. If you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to be featured on Indie Drop-In shows. If your episode meets some minimum requirements, Indie Drop-In will play your episode to real listeners. The best part is, the listeners like your show. Indie Drop-In provides easy links for them to subscribe. It's 100% free. You get to drop your feed into a established feed that already has actual, real listeners. This is great, guys. This is an amazing way to grow your audience. These listeners are already there. They listen to your episode on Indie Drop-In feed. They will go over and find your podcast and become a subscriber and love it. Greg, the creator of Indie Drop-In, just absolutely loves being involved in the independent podcast community. He is a great podcast mind. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Indie Drop-In. But more importantly, go to indiedropin.com/creators. Get the submission going and submit an episode of your podcast into the Indie Drop-In feed. Hurry now. Get to it. I remember back way in the day to actually downloading things on your MP3 player or whatever you had back then.
Yeah.
And taking it to go. Like there wasn't an Apple podcast. None of that existed. But I do remember I took a break really when, you know, the kids were born and everything from content creating, but really getting back into enjoying podcasts. I can remember about 5 years ago when I would listen to things like Jim Cornette and then also Conrad Thompson with Wu Nation with Ric Flair. Then Bruce Prichard and all that started coming into play. And that's when I really started thinking, like you said, like, man, I can get a lot more out of this than just listening to the same old songs, the same music all the time.
Yeah, I had Conrad on my show. And what that guy has accomplished with podcasting is mind-blowing. Like, his work ethic is insane. But also the fact that he has 7 podcasts and everything else that's going on, and he has a day job of running the mortgage company that he has, it's amazing. But I think one of the biggest things that's really stuck out for me from the conversation with Conrad is he doesn't really have a wrestling podcast. These are his words. He doesn't have a wrestling podcast. He has a nostalgia podcast. And there really isn't anything more powerful than that idea of nostalgia. And in wrestling, it's endless. It is literally endless. You could talk about nostalgia forever. And he's tapped into something really special there.
I've been playing DM tag with Conrad since July on trying to get an interview set up. He's a really busy guy, but damn it, I'm trying. I'm trying, Chris.
You'll get him eventually, but there is seriously no one busier than him.
I know. And you're right. He has tapped into something great. And I think that's what makes us all love wrestling. For me, and I'll let you comment on it, it just takes me back to my childhood, man. I really start remembering things in the really getting into the 90s, like Bret Hart, and I'm around the same age as you, so that kind of stuff. So I'm sure it hits home with you as well.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about wrestling is every kid has a memory of wrestling. Whether you loved it or hated it or you were somewhere in between, every kid has a memory of wrestling. And I'm sure it's so, you know, this happens to you all the time. You tell someone that you still watch wrestling and they're like, oh, that's cool, I used to watch. And you're like, oh, what happened? Like, why'd you stop? It's still really entertaining. But yeah, I was aware of it growing up, but became a mega fan when I was 15, 16. It was the heart of the Attitude Era. It was Austin McMahon was the main storyline that like sucked me into it. And then I went from watching no wrestling to watching literally everything like that. I watched Raw and Nitro and Thunder, Metal, Jacked, Heat, every pay-per-view, ECW. I just couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, I remember tapping into ECW. That was like a hidden gem, but depending on where you lived, it wasn't always easy to find things like that. I mean, unless you're trading tapes or digging for tapes.
Well, yeah, not till it came on TNN, which was like the late 90s, early 2000s, and then that was it, and then the company went under.
Wrestling's your big thing, and I'm not going to lie, that's obviously a lot of the stuff I listen to you is about wrestling. How did you kind of like break through as far as being allowed around there, kind of getting that media pass and kind of building the relationship you have with, well, various promotions now?
I started my career as a TV host. I've worked as an entertainment reporter for most of my career. So I'm interviewing people from all different walks of entertainment, comedians, actors, directors, singers, like all kinds of different things. And when I was working for MTV2 Canada, we were interviewing all these different people, and I saw that SmackDown was coming to town. So I asked my boss, I said, "Do you think we could interview a wrestler?" And my boss goes, "Yeah, of course. We've done that many times before." And I went, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to get paid to talk to a wrestler?" And this was Bobby Lashley. This was early 2007. And that was kind of how I started getting access. You've got a TV show. You're interviewing all these other different people that are working in the world of entertainment. Wrestling falls into that perfectly. So every TV station that I went to, every city that I moved to, it was whenever wrestling was in town, whether it was WWE or Impact Wrestling or Ring of Honor, I would do whatever I could to kind of get that access to do an interview with them. Oftentimes, whoever the handler was would say, "Hey, well, do you want to come to the show tonight?" I'd be like, "Oh my gosh, I got to interview, you know, Seth Rollins or Jack Swagger or Jeff Hardy, Kurt Angle, whoever it was, Mick Foley. And now I get to go to the show for free. Like, this is unbelievable." So that's how I started getting access. And because I was such a fan of wrestling, I was asking them a lot of questions that I genuinely thought was interesting as a fan. And my hope was that other fans might also find it interesting as well. So when I put it on my YouTube channel, that's when it started gaining traction, because a lot of the interviews that these wrestlers were doing in like a local TV market was people who had no idea about wrestling. And you would see this stuff all the time. They'd be like, "Oh, we've got John Kenna here, and John Kenna is going to talk to us about Raw tonight." Like, they wouldn't understand, you know, what was going on. So the fact that I was speaking the same language as them, I think really helped me get in and be able to do as many interviews as I did early on. Sorry, my dog wants to say hello here. Luna, it's okay. Sorry.
Is it Chris Jr.? CJ? Chris Jr.?
This is Luna. Luna, it's okay. We just got an Amazon package.
Okay. All right.
Okay, we're good now.
You're good, man. If I'm trying to remember correctly, you did something on a wrestler that was that first Emmy, right? Was it Gregory Iron or something like that?
So yeah, when I was working in Cleveland, I became friends with Gregory Iron, who's the only wrestler in the world who has cerebral palsy. And I just thought it was a fascinating story. In fact, he was able to get into the ring with CM Punk after Punk had left WWE. And Punk had some like very kind things to say about Gregory Iron. So yeah, it was a really cool story. And he let me in and was like, I talked to his entire family and I went to a show with him and I went backstage as he got ready. And the fact that he was able to let me in, I was able to get so close to him and so close to the story. It was really cool. So to be able to win an Emmy for something that I was passionate about, broadcasting, also passionate about wrestling, and kind of marry those two together, it was a really cool thing.
Yeah, I mean, that you're a journalist, right? And I think you get to bring like all those different things to what you're doing now, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest ones is when you work in news, you know, it's a fresh start every day. It's a clean slate every day, and you've got a deadline every single day. So your deadline is whatever time you have to be on TV for the first time that day. So maybe it's 6:06 p.m. or something. You've basically got that as your finish line. So I think that idea of working to a deadline has helped me so much in YouTube, even with social media, with podcasting. And also, you have to wear a lot of hats. In the first TV station that I worked at, I shot, wrote, produced, and edited all of my own stories. So now I know how to work a television camera. I know how to work an editing system. And taking that knowledge has been so, so helpful with everything that I've done since then.
I used to be in radio. I was actually an on-air voice for a short amount of time. Let me tell you what led to my, let's just say I got moved to a different department.
Okay.
I was interviewing a city official, and I meant to say that she has had a successful career, but I don't know why. Somehow it came out, I said, she's had a sexful career. 8:30 in the morning.
That was live on the air?
Live on the air, 8:30 in the morning. Everybody, you know, that's a big time for the radio.
Yeah.
The next week I was in marketing.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Figured you'd like that one. But no, that really happened. I don't know how it happened. Like, I guess the words are kind of close, but I don't think I've ever used the word sexful. So I don't know why.
I don't think sexful is even a word.
Yeah. Why did that even come out? I don't know, but it did.
I don't, but that sounds like a Freudian slip, my friend. That's what that sounds like.
Yep. Homer nods. Anyway, man, wrestling. Do you ever catch any shit for like loving wrestling? Are you to the point now where you're like known enough where like I bring up wrestling sometimes, they're like, wrestling? Who watches that now? Or who, you know?
Yeah. I think we all do. Right.
Yeah.
I think the funniest thing is still when people are like, well, don't you know it's fake? And I'm like, that is so ridiculous. Like, that'd be like standing outside of Hamilton on Broadway and being like, well, how could you enjoy it? You know, that's not actually Alexander Hamilton. You know, those are just actors playing them. Like, it's the exact same thing. So it's a, yes, it's a little ridiculous, but I get it. If you're not in this world and you're not ingratiated as a wrestling fan and you're watching it week in and week out, I can understand how from the outside looking in, it might seem like it's, you know, a little bit bizarre. So I understand that. I can empathize with that. But when you're in it, man, it's exciting. It's exciting watching the storylines unfold Monday to Monday, Wednesday to Wednesday, Tuesday to Tuesday, Friday to Friday, whatever show it is that you watch. I think it's exciting seeing that happen.
Now you're in this very nice studio. I've seen the pictures. It's incredible, man. Congratulations. That's awesome.
Thanks. I wish I was coming to you from there right now.
Still, it looks like a hell of a nice apartment you're in. But regardless, right. You know, the studio looks amazing.
Yeah. They did such an amazing job. So that's the Blue Wire Studios. My podcast network is Blue Wire. And they have a partnership with The Wynn. And The Wynn's one of the nicest hotels on the Vegas Strip. And they have the podcast studio inside the Wynn Hotel. So for anybody that's listening to this that either lives in Vegas or is traveling to Vegas sometime soon, if you walk just past the buffet on the main floor, just like right where all the gambling is, Blue Wire Studios, right there. And I've been so fortunate to go there every few weeks. Try to do as many interviews as we can when we get there. And then I'm releasing like 3 episodes a week right now. So Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So trying to do as many as I can every time I go to Vegas. But let me tell you, man, as someone who started out, my original podcast was was me in my bedroom with the door closed, kneeling on my bed because the acoustics were the best that way. To go from that to actually being able to sit in a beautiful studio in the wind. Yeah, it's a big difference.
That's actually where I was segueing. It's incredible that you went there starting out like that. Then you're saying that you were doing the editing too.
Yeah, I was doing the editing. I still do a lot of the editing in my YouTube videos, but we're just putting out a lot of content now. And I wanted to be able to focus on being able to create. Like I'm a big believer in the phrase that if you chase 2 rabbits, you'll catch none. And I don't think that you can be the best creator and the best editor and the best photographer and. I want to be able to focus on just trying to make the interviews that I do and the content that I have like as good as possible. So I have Joe who's editing my videos, and I have Donald who's editing my audio now. I have Larry who does thumbnails, and it's so amazing to be able to have people on the team. My friend Zeus, you might have seen the video that we did where we gave a bit of a tour of the podcast studio. That was my friend Zeus, who's an insanely talented shooter and editor. So it's so cool to be able to hand off these things that I'm like a 3 out of 10 good at, hand it off to someone who's like a 10 out of 10 good at.
How important did you think it was to at least learn those things though? Did that help you?
Huge. Huge, especially if we go back to broadcasting, it makes you appreciate everybody's job inside the newsroom. Because if you're just showing up and just reading words on the teleprompter, you don't appreciate what's going on behind the scenes. So the fact that when I started out my career, I was a volunteer at a community-run TV station. That was my first ever foray into television. And I did all the jobs there. I was VTR, I was audio, I was a floor director, I was a camera operator. I did everything. And the fact that you understand how all those jobs work gives you a greater appreciation for how it's all done as a whole. It's kind of like undercover boss. Like when the boss goes undercover and sees like, oh, the delivery guys have to deal with this. Oh, and the warehouse has to deal with this. It gives you a greater appreciation for the business as a whole.
Yeah, I agree. And I've made that comment. And people kind of argued like, well, if you could pay somebody to do it, just do it. Like, that's not my point. I think it's good to just learn the entire process. There's definitely a lot of value in that for sure.
Yeah. And I also think it's important if you're starting a podcast, ask yourself why you're starting it to begin with. I think that's the most important thing. If you're doing it just to hang out with your buddies and you're doing it as a hobby, cool. That's great. If you want to try to turn this into a business, you've got to treat it as a business. So I think it's important to figure that out from the beginning, but I think it's so crucial to understand how every step of the way is done first, then you can start handing it off.
I do want to get back to the business piece, but how important do you think the quality and the audio piece is? And I ask you this, not that your content has bad audio at all, but I love it because it's like, it's not over edited. And I'll give you an example. The quality sounds great, but when RVD's hacking up a storm, you don't cut any of that out. You didn't cut it out.
It's real.
And I thought that's real. That's great. So it's important not to over edit, but.
Yeah. There's a moment where I'm interviewing Cody Rhodes right before Double or Nothing. So that we're going way back here, like before the very first AEW pay-per-view, and his cell phone is ringing and we can't find it. And he's like, man, I want to turn this thing off. And we're searching all over the hotel room. And I'm like, I'm going to leave this in. Like, this is a human moment. And I think that people like seeing human moments. Like when Luna was barking up a storm here, like everybody that's listening to this that has a dog can go, oh yeah, I know exactly what's going on. I get that.
Yeah. And I think that makes it more real. Like I said, not that it's bad audio, but you guys don't over edit everything. And I think that's important because I myself can sit here and nitpick, and then it can take up and consume your whole day. And to your point, it almost takes away from the creating piece that you were talking about, because that's where your focus should be.
But there's, you know, different styles work for different people. I don't know if you're familiar with the Jordan Harbinger show.
Oh, yeah.
He talks about how like every episode has, I can't remember what the exact number is, but every episode has something like 100 or 200 or 300 different edits within the episode. He takes out every breath, every he takes out all that stuff to make the episodes as compact as possible. That's great. That really works for him. I mean, look at his numbers. It obviously works for him. But then there's the Joe Rogan style of like, you're just eavesdropping on a conversation that happens to be going on at that moment. And I think that's another style. So this is what I like. I also found really early in my career that you'd interview someone like Robert Pattinson, who with the Twilight movies was a huge star and had like a massive following. But it was the little things that he would do in the interviews, sometimes not even stuff he was talking about, just stuff he was doing, that I would notice in the comments were the things that people really related to. Like, actually, this happened with Kristen Stewart. She was just like itching her, like, she was just itchy, like on her collarbone, and it got a little bit red. And there were all these comments about like, oh, someone should have said something to her. And I was just like, wow, that's such a small, insignificant thing. But when you're truly a fan of someone, you keep an eye out for stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Never really thought of it like that. More or less, sometimes people can just be a little bit too nitpicky. They might have a little too much time on their hand. But I guess if you're a fan of somebody, there is that like defensive mode that you'd go in. Hey, listener, are you a podcaster or content creator? Well, you've got to hear this. I'm going to talk to you about Riverside.fm. I use Riverside to record all my interviews for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Super simple to use, and I get the audio quality of an actual recording studio. You can have video resolution up to 4K, uncompressed crystal clear audio, and continuous file uploading throughout your recording. I've used a lot of different things to record this podcast, and I'll be honest with you, some of them were just way more complicated than they needed to be. That will not be an issue with Riverside FM. It is super simple, and with that, you still have the quality audio, which is very critical. The support team is great and always available to assist you with any questions that you may have. Damn it, I'm serious when I say this. Riverside FM is the ultimate great recording solution for podcasters and content creators. Go online right now and check it out. You can do a free trial and give it a shot. I guarantee afterwards you will be so happy with it. You'll be looking through all the different packages and you will find one that meets your needs. legitimize the content you are recording and creating, go to riverside.fm right now to get started.
Yeah, I also like to just like if someone grabs their phone in the middle of an interview because it's ringing or something, I'll like be like, oh, what's on your background there? Is that your kid? Is that your, and like, it's cool to see those moments that might not come up naturally. And if it doesn't work, that's okay. We move on. But I think it's sometimes those moments can create really exciting things.
Random question for you. How do you feel about the YouTube comments that say like 7 minutes and 20 seconds, this starts to happen? I hate that. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I hate that. Like, conversation starts at 6 minutes and 5 seconds. It's like, yeah, shut the hell up.
Which always, you know, it hurts me because I run integrations on a few of my videos. Where am I? I'm not going to put them in the middle of a 50-minute interview. So I usually put them towards the front, and then people will be like, 3:24 is when the interview starts. You're welcome. I'm like, no, I want you to watch the ad. Like, we should all be supporting each other.
I always do this thing where I bring another indie podcaster in and we do the intro for the person that I'm going to have a conversation with. I say conversation more than interview.
Yeah, me too.
I do that to kind of like help them out and like get a little exposure there too. But people are like, your time to context is way too high. I'm like, that is content, right? I mean, I am sharing with them too and they are talking about the person. So it is content. It does count. Sorry, I'm off my soapbox now.
No, but I also think that the thing we're realizing more and more as every year goes on is everything is content. We used to think in terms of like 2015, for example, content had to look a certain way and was like wrapped up with a bow on top and looked pretty. Content is literally anything now.
It's awesome that you're saying that because there's a lot of people that are out there trying to tell you how to do this, how to make YouTube videos, how to create podcasts. You bring up a good point when you say it doesn't work. Like, what works for me does not work for you. So it's important to realize that everything really can be content.
Yeah. And look, there are formulas that obviously do work and you can watch those videos in YouTube and probably learn a lot from it. But I really just come back to, if it's interesting to you, pretty good chance with 8 billion people in the world that it's going to be interesting to somebody else too.
You talked about the business piece and how you have to treat your content like that. What did you mean by that exactly? I'd like to hear your opinion and some advice on that.
I don't think you have to do that, but I think it's important to ask yourself why you're doing it in the first place. The best thing about podcasting is anyone can do it. And the worst thing about podcasting is anybody can do it. And I think it's really important to ask yourself, what are you doing that's going to make you stand out from the literally millions of other podcasts that are out there? So what I mean by treating it like a business is actually like just that. Like, if you're going to have one podcast a week, what day is it going to be on? Okay, great. Have you planned out your next 4 podcasts? Awesome. Have you booked the guests for those? Cool. If you're not great at transcribing, have you found someone that's really good at that? And it's a matter of like putting the right processes and also people in place to help it succeed. And if you are truly trying to make money from it, are you spending money on advertising? And I think that those are things that a lot of podcasters don't do. I think a lot of podcasters have great sounding podcasts with amazing content, but if nobody knows it exists, how good could it possibly be? So I think it's important to do whatever you can to kind of stack the odds in your favor. Because podcasting, unlike YouTube, you can't really find stuff organically. On YouTube, you could be watching a video about dogs, for example, and maybe other dog videos will pop up on the side. And then you'll go, oh my gosh, I had no idea about this famous dog or this dog owner or trainer or whatever. Doesn't really happen that way in the podcasting world. So I think you need to do whatever you can to find a way for people to even know that you exist.
Yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't have that like Google piece tied in with it. So then it becomes important. Like, it's either Chris is going to have to bring me, Jeff, onto his podcast word of mouth, or it's like you said, sometimes you have, if you want to make money, sometimes you have to spend money, especially in podcasting, because you're right, the discoverability is just not the same at all.
It's not the same at all. And I think that without having a decent sized social media following, it's also really, really tough, because unless you have some sort of a platform, you're kind of relying on whatever your follower base is to hopefully, maybe, possibly be interested in your content. And that's kind of where it ends. Like, you need to keep building on that, I think.
How big has social media been for you? Because I know you're really engaged, right? when I reach out to you and I say, hey, Chris, just short introduction, this is what I'm doing, you know, I'd like to chat with you. You responded right away. So you're very engaged with the people that are following you on social media.
Yeah, social media has been a big one. And I'll say this, I worked in local television in Toronto and then Cleveland and then Miami. And it's great. You have a platform of being on TV every single day there. And that's amazing. Outside of that bubble of your city, though, nobody has any idea who you are and what you do. And what social media has done for all of us is it's even the playing field. It's even the playing field from someone who has a television show or someone who plays in the NFL or someone who's a politician. You can have a conversation with them on the exact same platform on that same level as them. So it's completely changed the game in terms of that. And it's also allowed us to reach a new audience. TikTok's amazing with being able to present your stuff to new audiences. So recently I've been just taking clips from my interviews and putting them on TikTok. And then that also goes on Instagram Reels. So the discoverability factor is there, but it's not as easy as like it is on YouTube where you put it out there and maybe they show it to people that are interested in the same thing.
Those are great tips on discoverability. What other advice do you have on social media? One thing I always tell people is respond to as many people as possible.
Yeah, that's great advice. I think especially on Twitter, like have a dialogue with people. And on Instagram, spend a few minutes to heart some comments and like respond to people, especially if you're a brand. And I mean that not just as a personal brand, but if you run a company and you have an Instagram page and someone who's your customer or potential customer has gone out of their way to take a few seconds to comment that they like your photo or your product or whatever, the very least you could do, quite literally, the very least you could do is go on there and just say, thank you. And they're never going to forget that. If you commented on Coca-Cola's page and they said, thanks, cheers, you would probably remember that. You might even tell your family about it when you're, you know, having Thanksgiving dinner or something like that. So I think it's just those little things, those little interactions go such a long way.
I'd probably go buy a Coca-Cola right then. I'd have to stop what I was doing and go right then.
The thing is, they make you feel significant in that moment. And I think that that's a really important aspect of just humans in general. But that's a really big thing on social media is you want to be able to feel like in this crowd of people that the singer on stage looked at you as he was singing and pointed at you as he was singing. And that's kind of what that is.
You're by far north of 100 million views now on YouTube. What are some things that you would like to see happen with YouTube or podcasting? Or what are some goals you have for that moving forward?
Yeah, I don't know specifically what I would change other than the fact that I wish it didn't go away so much from the creators. I feel like YouTube is leaning more into, oh, you're already famous. Oh, you already have an audience. We're going to promote your stuff like crazy. And I just think it's difficult if you're just starting out to really get that ball rolling. So it'd be nice if we could go back a little bit to 10-ish years ago where everybody has a fair chance rather than just big corporations and celebrities who seem to be the ones that are rising to the top a lot.
If I'm just starting a podcast, what is some general advice you'd give me for being a content creator? I don't know what you call yourself. I just say content.
Yeah, I just call myself Chris, I think.
CVV.
That's it. My first advice is start. Like, just start. Stop talking about it and just start. And I think that there's so many people, maybe even people that are listening to this right now, that have the best idea for a podcast or the best name for a podcast, or their friends always tell them that they're so funny. Start. Like literally just hit start. Don't worry about the equipment. Don't use that as an excuse. Start. And you'll figure out after one episode what worked and what didn't, record another episode, and just keep going. And I think that that's a really important thing. Also, figure out what your niche is. You can't just say, we're going to talk about what's going on in the world, because that's not going to work. Like, don't try to be a buffet. Try to be a steakhouse. Try to be the best at what you do in whatever niche it is. If you love Jenga, do a Jenga podcast and become like the Jenga guy rather than going, I'm going to be the person who talks about all of the board games. Like, hone in on one thing. And I would say that that's the thing that you should be known for.
What is it you say you're trying to accomplish with with the content you're creating?
Well, it was for a long time, I'm trying to have long form interviews with wrestlers and have people see that there's more to them than meets the eye. But now it's about reverse engineering anybody who's successful. I've interviewed people from all walks of life for my entire career, and obviously a lot of wrestlers, because, you know, we're both wrestling fans. But for me, it's so often we only see the finished product. We only see Tom Brady with 7 Super Bowl rings, or, you know, the actor that's holding an Oscar, and we don't see what happened along the way. So what I like to do with my show is reverse engineer, how did you get to where you're at? And if I'm at just step 2 in the journey, what are the next few steps that I need to take? If you're an actor, did you start acting when you were a kid? Were you in plays at your church? Were you taking acting lessons? Like, what was the process like? We see what you're doing now. We see you with all of your accomplishments now, but where were you before? And I think that that can be really inspiring to someone who's just starting off their journey.
I agree. And I think that's why it's awesome to talk to you. And I'm glad that you took the time, because it's nice to hear from somebody who might be at step 3 or 4, not 1 or 2.
Yeah. And just thank you for having me on. So I think it's really cool what you're doing, like highlighting podcasters and what they do.
I do have a question for you. I promised a couple of my buddies that I would ask their question. Do you have time to answer them? Okay.
Let's hear it.
The first is actually from Spyhard's podcast. They want to know what your most challenging interview has been throughout the years.
Oh, wow. That's difficult, because I've done a lot of them and I think they're challenging in different ways. I'll give you two. And then challenging in completely different ways. I'll give you another example. Like, so when you're on a red carpet, those are challenging interviews, because sometimes you don't know who you're talking to or how long you're going to talk to them. But I did an interview with Sylvester Stallone. And it wasn't challenging because it was Sylvester Stallone. It was challenging because I didn't know I was going to interview Sylvester Stallone. So he was promoting the new Rambo movie in Miami, and I was told I was going to get the actress that was playing his daughter in the film. So I was like, cool. So I prepared some questions. I'm driving to this hotel to do the interview, and a representative from the movie studio calls me on the way and says, hey, are you almost here? And I said, I don't know. I'm like 5 minutes away. They said, oh, well, get here as soon as you can. And I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, we've got plenty of time. What? Like, I'm not running late. What happened? So I get there and they said, as soon as you get here, like, let us know. So I said, oh, I just parked the car. I'm like, heading to the elevator now. I get up the elevator. As soon as I get off, they're standing right there and they go, all right, come with me right now. And I'm like, okay, like, what's the rush? And I'm standing in front of the door ready to go into the interview. And they said, Sylvester Stallone has 5 minutes left and we wanted to get you in. So, and then they opened the door and they said, here you go. So that was a super challenging interview, because I wasn't prepared to talk to him, but we ended up having an amazing conversation. So that was definitely one of them. On the other end of the spectrum was the interview I did with David Benoit was really difficult because of the subject matter. You know, and for people that don't know, he's the son of Chris Benoit, who tragically murdered his family and committed suicide in 2007. And David hadn't talked about this. And I think a lot of the things that we talked about in that interview, he hadn't even talked about at all, let alone on camera. So that was a really difficult one to do, because there were a lot of things that we had to kind of figure out, like, how were we going to approach this subject? But he was great. He told me the night before, like, I trust you and you can ask me anything you want.
I think that says something, you know, about you as an interviewer, Chris. Like I said, you just get it. And I think that just shows how comfortable people are with you. So that's a hell of a compliment.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you for saying that.
One more question here real quick. My buddy's just recently started a wrestling podcast. You're going to love the name of this podcast. What a Maneuver.
What a Maneuver.
Exactly. They wanted to know what your most awkward wrestler that you had the pleasure of interviewing, and then, you know, the best, what your favorite interview would be.
I'll start with the best. The best is The Rock. You know, huge Rock fan. And like in high school, I would ask people questions simply so I could shout, it doesn't matter what you think. So The Rock meant a lot to me, and he's great. And if he's your hero, you should meet him. Like, I know they say you shouldn't meet your heroes, but if The Rock's your hero, do whatever you can to try to meet him. The worst? I think if you looked at my interview with Evan Bourne, the first interview I did with him, it's just a strange interview. And then when I interviewed him again a few years later, he apologized just for how awkward that interview was. So go back, check it out. I don't know what was going on. I got him right before he was about to perform that night. And I don't know. It's just strange. That's the best word I can use. Strange and a little bit awkward. So Matt Sydal is a great guy. I love him, but he will tell you, and he did tell me in the last interview I did with him. Sorry, just first one wasn't great.
We've all had those off nights. A couple months ago, I forgot to plug in my actual microphone, so it was just recording from my laptop.
Yeah, well, we've all been there. Yeah.
Again, man, I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. It means a lot, and all your work is just great, and I think you're a great example for the content creating community.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate you taking the time and appreciate you inviting me, and congrats to you, man. Look what you're doing. Look at the following that you've built. That's amazing. And I can't wait to see where you're at this time next year and this time the year after that and so on.
If you ever have a really rough week, you know, and you want a really low performing episode of your podcast, and I can just tell you the crazy stories from the random indie podcast I've met, I'm available, FYI, just so you know, man.
Thank you. I'll keep that in mind.
Hey, seriously, thanks again, man.
Appreciate you.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the indie podcaster. Keep being you, keep being great.